Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a very important show. I think we need to be financially literate. And the more you subject yourself to what's going on in the media, it makes you paralyzed because it feels like there's no way you can outrun this problem. It's just going to overtake you and it's something you can do. But I don't believe that. And neither does my guest. He's been a guest on in the past and somebody I respect highly. We're going to speak with Mr. Kerry Lutz of the Financial News Network. And what we're going to talk about is the truth. You know, it's not about the clicks. It's not about the fear mongering. It's about how you can really take a step back, get your bearings, make financial plans. And I believe once you have financial health, everything else falls into place. So Kerry, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Likewise, Dr. George, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I think you're doing an amazing job.
Oh, your sweetheart. Thank you so much. You know, but in the little intro, I wanted to try to get people's mind around the financial doom and gloom that's out there. We're hearing about inflation, interest rates, the worst uptick in our financial devastation that's coming. You know, we've got food issues, we've got fuel issues, and I wanted to have you on because I wanted to tease apart, you know, take small bites to figure out what's hype, what's true, and more importantly, how we can take our power back. So let's start off with the Great Reset. I think that's been something that people have been bandying about, and we've talked about it on occasion, but what is it exactly? Is it for our benefit, or is it to basically cause financial catastrophe for everybody?
Well, the originator of this concept is a guy named Klaus Schwab. Some believe that he is a sociopath. I'm not qualified to judge, but he seems to think that somehow the people don't know what they're doing. But if you just let the geniuses take over and run things and give up your freedom, he said, you'll earn nothing and you'll be happy. Your life is going to be much better. But this is a group of people that believe, they call the rest of us eaters, because we're eating meat, whatever, and that's creating greenhouse gases, climate change, all this. And climate's always changing, whether it's because you eat steak or I eat chicken or both like fish. I don't think it has anything to do with it, but the sustainability thing, all of this, they seem to want to get rid of a portion of humanity and the less productive members. And maybe that's what this is really all about. I mean, you had those guide stones in Georgia recently getting blown up. I don't quite know what that's all about. But they seem to have some really strange ideas, and they seem to have a lot of power to implement these ideas. The idea that Germany can shut down its nuclear power plants and boycott Russian gas and oil, and that somehow they're going to make it through the winter, a really potentially bad winter, without a lot of people being hurt badly or even dying, is madness. And you have to say, are these people stupid, or is this part of the plan? I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist here. This is just a fact that, let's switch to electric vehicles when they can't make them in adequate numbers at this point. The resources, everything else, the power grid. Let's just stop producing oil, cut off pipelines, all these things. And for what purpose? How is humanity going to be better off? I'm not sure, because a mass die-off due to the inability of people to heat their homes. In Germany, they're talking about having these warming centers. So you won't be able to have heat in your house, but you go to like schools, and you can hang out there for a couple hours and get warmed up. I mean, this is just insanity here, Dr. George.
You know, the more I think about this, if you really want to take a bird's eye view of this, and you really believe that there was global warming and we needed to find an alternate alternative energy source, why does it have to be so drastic where people have to get hurt in the process? You spoke about Germany. What about us, where we cut off our own pipelines and we're looking for oil from people who hate us? When a couple of years ago, we were the number one oil producing country in the world. So again, it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face without something else that's up and ready to go to that is cost effective. You heard about Texas, right? Where they're talking about energy, having the brownout and not even soup up your electric car because their wind power energy is not enough to support the state. There's not enough wind. I mean, what is up with that? How can people just ignore what's right in front of them? If you really felt this way, at least ramp it up, right? Scale it up so it can be cost effective. That's not what they're doing, though.
Oh, well, the liberals for many years, Dr. George, have said we need $5 and $6 mm-hmm. gallon gas. All right. They wanted this. Now we have it. And they're like, oh, we didn't want that. You know, plausible deniability. They have no plausible deniability. This is exactly their plan. Mm-hmm. And look, we're probably not going to run out of energy, but a lot of people aren't driving around as much. It's going to hurt business. It's going to hurt the economy. And this is by design. This didn't just happen. We didn't just wind up with a shortage. It's like the formula shortage.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly.
That's by design here. And the very people who claim to have so many of your interests at heart are doing the most harm to you right now. Oh, yeah, let's just get rid of the police. Who needs police, right? They serve no purpose whatsoever. Well, my feeling is until you come up with something better than the police, they're all we got. And so many of our urban centers here have turned into urban jungles, urban warfare, that, it's dangerous there as in Iraq and other horrible places, or down in South America, Honduras, or Guatemala, those places, super mm-hmm. violent societies. Cut back on the police. Gee, I can't believe it. Crime's going up, murder's going up, all of this going up. But in the states where they haven't cut back, and I won't mention colors, the crime rates have gone up a little bit because of the general chaos in society, but not like Cleveland, like New York City, Chicago, total war zone, LA, all these places. They just can't figure out why this would happen when they're the very cause of it.
Don't leave out the revolving door justice, right? So you commit a crime and you're back out in the street without bail and before you can probably process the papers. So, where's the, in your opinion, how are people so docile about this? Where I understand it's been really and sorry, it's thunderstorming where I am. So if you hear it, that's what it is. Sorry, listeners. But you've got a whole system where something happens. You let the person out on the street. You disarm citizens, or you want to.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect storm where the criminals are going to be running the show. And with carte blanche, how nobody can see this coming? I just find that really weird.
It's insane. It's the very definition of insanity. Hey, I am the first to agree as a recovering attorney that there are many flaws in our justice system and we drastically need reform that we haven't had since the 60s when we effectively had negative reform that led to all the situations we're in now. I'm the first one, I think. I think the system, I don't want to say it's racist, but it certainly is tilted against those who don't have the means to get the proper representation. You tell me, what's more racist? Putting criminals in jail, holding them on bail to ensure they can't do any more harm? Or perhaps having these inner city schools that teach absolutely nothing mm-hmm. and that prepare our children? To me, the schools in these, the public school system is the most racist system that we've ever created.
I think you're absolutely right. It's built on, based on what you look like, you can't achieve. It's almost ingrained in your DNA that you need a leg up somehow. And it usually isn't a leg up. It's a leg down, quite frankly, because created a system where, at least emotionally, nobody could feel good about, I need to have the system completely change in order for me to succeed. That doesn't even make sense. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Kerry Lutz. And before the break, I think, Kerry, you were making, connections with what's going on in society and how this is dovetailing with economic problems that we find ourselves in. And it seems to me that it's all about divide and conquer. You're talking about race and sex and orientation and all these other things. But in actuality, everybody is in the same boat and they need the same thing, a place to live that's reasonable, a system that'll educate you so that you can come out and get a job and support yourself, health, and as you get older, some safety net, I guess, or at least the ability to work and live off of what you earned. And do you think that that social construct where everybody's the enemy, everybody did something to somebody, there is the professional victim class, and it just keeps expanding in a way to have people look at, blame the other person, but not take personal responsibility. Is this by design?
Well, put it this way. I can't point to a definitive conspiracy for it, but it seems to me that if you wanted to destroy a society, if you wanted to destroy Western civilization, then you would come up with something like this to do it. So it seems like it's purposeful to me, but I can't point to anybody and say, well, they sat down and they had a meeting and this is what they came up with. Maybe, you know, the educational system, you can go back to that guy Dewey and, you know, all the damage that he did to public education. United States used to have the best public education system in the world. And now we're like on a downward trajectory. And you have to look and say somebody was responsible for it. Maybe it's the unions to a large point, large degree. They definitely had a role in it, but it certainly does seem to me like it's intentional.
Well, when you look at the last couple of years, when I again look at everything, it seems that there's a centralization of everything. Healthcare has been centralized and a corporatization. The banking system, education. From the health standpoint, the hospitals have all consolidated. They took private practice and pretty much decimated it. So it made us all, most of us, into employees. And you don't have power as an employee. You just do what you're told. And it's all about the bigger picture and the conveyor belt mentality. Is that something that you see? I mean, COVID, for example, it seems everybody was kind of remotely removed from the economic structure. You know, you were getting money to stay home. You're getting money to, you know, it's just like a free fall of money coming from the government. What's the consequences of that? It seems like people either they love it and they haven't gone back, or they've taken the individual free market side of the economy and kind of made it a lot smaller, did they?
Yeah, well, it certainly is a real negative, and the inflation that we're seeing, the experts never first told people like me and Austrian economists, was a natural assured outcome of just printing up a bunch of money and dropping it from helicopters. So to be surprised by what's happening now is really disingenuous. It was baked in the cake from the moment they started passing these stimuluses.
Is there another alternative that could have been chosen that could have, in your opinion, sustained the economy, kept people as self-sufficient as possible? Did we have to go this way, basically? Or was this a choice that served somebody?
Well, I'm not a medical professional, so I can't say. But I knew from the get-go that these lockdowns would be ineffective. They didn't work. We know this for a fact. I mean, it's all been demonstrated by Johns Hopkins that the lockdowns did nothing for us. So, you know, to think that there was certainly another way. And I can't remember which Scandinavian country was it? Sweden?
Sweden.
That, they opted out of lockdowns and they were condemned. And then your state, Georgia, opted out. Mm-hmm. And then Florida did. They were all condemned. The results have been no worse in Florida and Georgia than in New York. Perhaps they're worse in New York because they sent the COVID-infected patients to the nursing homes to wreak havoc. So certainly there was an alternative. And there's a book by Dr. Scott Atlas detailing everything that happened. And really, the lockdown madness didn't end until he got appointed by Trump to the presidential COVID thing. He was ignored, but he blew the whistle on them. And finally, they backed off. But they're still looking to do this. You know, they're not just going away.
No, it seems like another round. California is already talking about masks for kids going into the fall. And I hope this doesn't happen again, because I think we've lived through it, as you said, long enough to figure out that it didn't work. If it worked, we would not be going through this iteration again of more of the same. If it worked, why do the same thing, expect a different result? You know, from a psychological standpoint, it doesn't make sense. And does it dovetail with the economy? I mean, from living in your home, not being able to communicate, because we're social creatures, human beings, not being able to see your friends, having lost loved ones, not being able to go to their funeral, not being able to see people in the hospital. I mean, it was just an onslaught. From an economic standpoint, how can you remove yourself from this system? Do you have to do something? Oh, go ahead. I mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
It's okay. Sorry. To a certain extent, you can't remove yourself from the system. There's, you know, unless you live on a farm, off the grid, you're dependent. You know, the whole thing of modern life, the complexities, means dependency and more and more dependency on government. But you don't have to be dependent on the government for your thoughts. You can be free to think what you want. You know, and I always say to people, the most important real estate is between your two ears, you know, above your neck. And if you control that real estate, there's really nothing they can do to you. And that's kind of the key. So the economy, it's going to be the economy. Hopefully we'll snap out of this madness at some point and go back to what works. We know it works. Competition, free enterprise. That doesn't mean crony capitalism and crapitalism, as it's often called, and ever-increasing debt cycles. That's not what it's about. It's about allowing participants in the economy to pursue their own interests in a legal, non-harmful manner that benefits everybody. And that's what we've gotten away from. I think that only the government can do it. Any problem needs to be solved, even if the government created it, which most problems we're encountering now, they have. Look to the government to solve. If they did, it's often compared to making the arsonist fire chief responsible for keeping the city from burning down. It's really that simple.
That also depends on your mindset. Have we been educated out of the mindset of capitalism and individual pursuit? It seems like it's become a curse word. Like capitalism, they've equated that with selfishness, racism, non-diversity. I mean, it's just been an onslaught. It's kind of interesting, though, when you think about it. It only works for the corporate version of capitalism, but not anything else, right? The only things that were allowed to stay open was the big box stores. Even if your little mom and pop did the same thing as a big box store, you were non-essential. Again, how do people just ignore the fact that it was not a level playing field for no good reason, right? That's kind of strange to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, fear is a great motivator and a great way to get people to just consent, because you're going to save them, you're going to protect them, you're going to stop them from the bad things in life. So therefore, all you have to do is just listen to me and not question me. That generally, over time, doesn't work. And you wind up, you know, the old thing of Jefferson, men who give up freedom for security wind up with neither, right?
Yeah, very true. And segueing from that, we, the government protecting everybody, the housing situation is kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, here in Georgia, what used to be $500 apartments are now triple. And is that also because of what's gone on with, I know that there was a moratorium, wasn't there, on removing people or people who weren't paying rent, et cetera. Is this an outgrowth of that because it was so artificially suppressed? Now it's rebounded because of that? It's just so, I'm just curious as to what drove that. Is it the government's policies?
Oh, it's definitely government policies. It's the inflation. It's the restriction of the inability to build new housing fast enough, largely because of regulations, zoning, things like that. And it's also a function of flight from those northern cities and restrictive cities. And they're going to places where they perceive freedom is higher, the opportunity is higher. Funny how those two go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And the cost of living is less, where government doesn't have as big a role as, say, New York State or Illinois. There is a torrent of people leaving those places for a better life, to escape the tyranny of those cities, the tyranny of the violence. All goes back to the justice system, unsafe streets, all of these things. And of course, they're going to go where they perceive that the freedom is greater and the opportunity is greater. And all you have to do is look and see how states with no income tax or low income tax have grown over the past two or three decades compared to those high taxes. Places like California and Illinois and New York, New Jersey, Michigan, all of these, Connecticut. Connecticut was the last state in the country who has adopted a personal income tax, a state income tax. And that was in 1981, I believe. So it's 41 years ago. It's had the slowest growth rate of any state in the country. And their cities are literally in shambles. Hartford, the insurance capital of the United States, they fled there. Bridgeport, all of the cities in Connecticut, for the most part, are in shambles.
That's something to think about, because it's all about your choices at this point. So I want to discuss what choices we can make to ameliorate this. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Kerry Lutz, and you can go to his website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, and there you can see everything he writes. He has a podcast as well, and he's a wealth of information. And before the break, Kerry, I think we did a great job of breaking down all of these pieces of society that are broken and that are leading us towards this, hopefully not, it'll not materialize, but a future that's going to be very challenging. So let's talk about solutions, because you can't control a lot of what the government does, but you can control your individual choices. I understand that the dollar is not what it was. And from an oil perspective, isn't the dollar, well, will it still be the financial instrument of choice for like oil? Because wasn't it the standard for buying oil in the past? And now with Ukraine and all sorts of things, it's not as powerful as it used to be. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, they weaponized the dollar against Russia and all the other countries in the world that didn't like us so much, or even so-called allies, look at it and say, well, they did that to them. Are they going to do that to us? And that is leading them to look for alternatives. And I mean, I totally understand it, but I don't think China-centric world is going to be good for anyone. It's a country that is responsible for grave crimes against humanity, whether it's organ harvesting, re-education camps, starving out people. I mean, it's just done horrible things. Mm-hmm. So we don't really want to look to them to the future, but the self-immolation of the West and the U.S. and the dollar is leading a lot of countries to that choice. And I think it's going to be really bad for humanity. But until the West wakes up that they're in a existential fight for survival and that they need to go back to the things that made the West great and made it the driver of civilization and growth and progress throughout the world, until we get back to that, we're going down here. And look, you can't live every day thinking about this. It's not going to help you. Mm-mm. It's not going to make your life any better, any happier. So you have to understand that you need to be looking at your own happiness, contentment, your family, doing the best you can. And that's all you can do. Just do the best you can. And if that means getting more education, taking courses, getting a side hustle, gig, whatever, driving for Uber, whatever you have to do to keep your family going and to keep yourself solvent, you need to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where it really starts. You know, there's a limited amount that you could do there other than embrace family and community and hope for the best. We've been in other tight fixes before, but generally not so much of our own making and not situations where outcome is so dire, potentially. So I think we'll still rescue ourselves from it, but it requires the expansion of consciousness, if you will. Mm-hmm. Einstein said, you can't solve a problem with using the same level of thinking that got you the problem in the first place. And I think that's the biggest problem that we're encountering here. Our solution for everything is government. And that solution, you know, I always say the cure is the disease when you're dealing with where we are now. Because the so-called cure of government fixing everything, that is the disease. So that's what you first have to understand. And if that happens on a massive enough scale, then we have a good chance of getting through this and even making things better than they are. If it doesn't get skulls, then the outcome will be obvious. But in the meantime, you got to pursue your own self-interest, do the best you can, and not dwell on the negativity, because the depression, which I'd argue we've been on since 08 and 09, is a depression of mental state first, and it translates into the economy and everything else.
I agree, mind and body are connected, and if you feel like you're put upon, you won't make any moves, and then you just end up being, I don't know, a victim of whatever the circumstance is. But from a more concrete standpoint, the dollar is questionable, right? So how do you recommend tangible things, like if you can own a home or buy a piece of land, something that you can physically hold in your hand as opposed to some sort of financial instrument that is, you know, nebulous, like Bitcoin or something that's digital? Is that really something that you need to make decisions on and start getting if you don't have it already?
Yeah, well, you know, you can still acquire some silver. It's kind of trading at it's kind of on sale now at the price it's at. The dollar is actually has gotten at a level that it hasn't been at, but not because it's so strong. Euro is so weak and the yen is so weak. So certainly tangible, having a house, but making sure that you afford the mortgage so when you get one, which makes sense in inflationary times, is really important. Real estate investing, people are always going to need a place to live no matter what. And owning income producing real estate in the right places at the right prices. They're a bit high right now, but they'll probably come down to the higher mortgage rates. At some point, the Fed will reverse and they'll start cutting interest rates. And then we'll have another boom. It might not be a great boom, but it'll help things for a little while. And then we go back to square one. So, you know, for the average person, storing up some food, emergency food, not saying you got to have years worth, but several weeks is always a good idea. Natural disasters happen repeatedly throughout the country and the world. and a little precious metals hoard if you can afford it. Good idea, like I said before. And, you know, cryptos, I'm not convinced about. You know, they've taken a big, big hit lately. Mm-hmm. But a small 5% or less of your portfolio in cryptos, probably not a bad idea. But understanding that it really is a risky asset class at this point, you know, eventually the central banks will switch to central bank digital currency, to bake and cake, part of the Great Reset or whatever, and all that's going to happen. So, you know, you can do things, certainly investing in yourself, improving your skill set, not necessarily looking at college if that's not right for you, but vocational trades. You know, there's not enough plumbers, not enough electricians. Knowing how to build stuff, make stuff, fix stuff, it's all going to be skills that are in universal and permanent demand. Build the robots and build your house and fix your electric or your, or give you a new hot water heater. Somebody needs to know how to do this stuff. And we've had this overemphasis on higher education, and I put higher in quotes. That led to a shortage of these people and a general elitism in society looking down upon you if you know how to fix a toilet, which I'll never understand. You know, being able to do things with your hands, having those skills go a long way. They're so easy to get now, mm-hmm. Dr. George, you know, between YouTube and online. I mean, I learned how to podcast online, not that I'm going to be able to change a light bulb with what I learned, but I learned how to podcast online. It's a very complex process when you're starting out. Now it's easy peasy. Mm-hmm. So point is, you can learn how to do that on your own without, you know, without any formal education. You welders, you know, getting paid six figures first year at a welding school. All of these vocational training programs are available to you if that's what you want. Just figuring out how to raise your income by 25%, whether it's driving Uber or, you know, Airbnb in your place, whatever it might be, figure out a way tomorrow, next week, to raise your income by 25%. You can do it. Anyone could do it. And that might mean raising your income means cutting your spending. That might be the way for you to raise your income. Hey, you don't need every single cable package. You know, you don't need every single bell and whistle for your cell phone plan. Get rid of it. Cut it down to basics. Get a couple of thermostats, programmable thermostats in your house. Stop your energy consumption. Cut it back. All these things will work. And look to a good accountant, you know, depending upon your financial situation, is another way to save money on taxes. You know, you have to look at everything now. You can't just coast like you once did.
I think you're right on that one. And I know we're going to take a break in a minute, but I wanted to start off the conversation about your 401k and things that you've been paying into for years And I think I'll have you answer that question after the break, because I bet it's going to be involved. But I'd be curious to know, everybody's kind of socked away in for the future. But if we're in inflationary times, isn't the value of what you socked away less?
Yeah, well, that could well be the case.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's finish answering that question when we return. Let's take our third break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. Again, we're speaking with Mr. Kerry Lutz, and you can go to his website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And before the break, Kerry, I was just curious about the folks who've paid in all this money, you know, to their 401k and in doing the right thing for their future. Is there something that they need to think about? Should they leave it in? Should they pull some of it out, put it in precious metals? What kind of thing can they do to hedge against disaster?
Well, first, I'm not a licensed financial advisor, so I can't tell you what to do. And everybody's situation is different. Mm-hmm. But if all of your assets besides your home are in a retirement plan, it might be wise, I know I would, look at other alternative investments. There are things called self-directed IRAs. You can roll your 401k into that, put it into real estate, put it into precious metals. It's all available to you. And you don't have to take the whole thing. You could do a partial rollover. All these things are available. You need to talk to people who actually understand what you have there and can help you plan. And this requires having goals. When do you want to retire? And what would you do if two-thirds of your retirement that you saved for vaporized? Not just going into the stock market and losing money. I think that'll turn around. But the idea that you lost a large portion of your purchasing power, so that the $500,000 that you managed to save in your 401k will only buy $350,000 worth of goods and services. That's what I think you're asking. Mm-hmm. And that's where you need the financial planner. Over time, I still have faith in the stock market in that I believe that that it's going to turn around. It's cyclical in nature. But the purchasing power that your stock market returns give to you could be dramatically lowered. Whereas if you'd been in real estate over the past 2.5 years, you've really made a killing. And that's not to say that real estate's going to continue to go up. But if inflation continues to go higher, then real estate is going to, because income producing real estate, rents will go higher, and people will still need a place to live. So that's certainly one way. It is somewhat of a hedge. It's illiquid, though, not guaranteed, although real estate is more liquid than it's ever been now, the ability to refinance. Whether that will continue on into the future in its present form is another question you have to ask. But all these things are available. You just need to find the right people to guide you. And, you know, the stock market, if inflation is running right now, they admit it's 9.1%. It's probably based on the old way that they calculated, somewhere around 15 or 16%. Mm-hmm. That means this, to stay even, you got to get a 15, 16% return yearly. And even in the best years in the stock market, that's difficult. You know, 20% returns in the stock market appear not going to be happening. But at some point, the market will turn around. But it's really difficult for an individual, myself included, to time this stuff. Really, really hard to do that. So, you know, I personally hold some mining stocks. Not for everyone. They're super volatile. They're in a major bear market right now. But the price of gold probably will turn around, in my estimation, towards the end of this year, beginning of next. So fourth quarter is generally a time when precious metals perform very well and mining stocks. So you can't predict the future. Nobody can. You know, Mike Tyson said everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face. Right. Yeah. And, you know, but it's better to have a plan than not have one, regardless, even if your plan is wrong or turns out to be incorrect, because then you know it's wrong and you can take steps to change it. But if you have no plan, you're just like a piece of driftwood floating in the ocean, and you go where the currents, the tides take you.
Right.
Oof. So plan is essential.
So that's an excellent pathway to look towards the future. But when you're in the heat of it right now and you're trying to make movements, is it wise to do more cash-based living now than credit and really try to pay down your debt? I mean, it sounds, I would think that's pretty obvious, but I'm specifically talking about cash-based everything. You're less likely to put stuff out there if you got to put cash out. I don't know why that is, but seeing the money come out of your hand, it just doesn't feel right. So you kind of hold on to it. Is that something that people should try?
Well, here's the thing, though. So sophisticated investors understand how to make money off of inflation. Okay. Mm. Unsophisticated investors lose money in inflation. All right. the people who make the most money during inflationary times mm-hmm. are the ones that owe the most money, because you get to pay back your debts in depreciated dollars. But that requires you to buy assets with that debt that will actually produce cash flow. Now, buying a house would be the one exception during this period of time, because, hey, the real inflation rate is 16%. You're get a mortgage today at 5.5%, you're negative. You're actually paying a negative interest rate. So you're paying back in depreciated dollars. Hopefully your job or however you earn income will give you somewhat of a hedge against that, but you're actually making money. Now, to go buy a flat screen TV to go into debt doesn't make any sense, but to buy an income producing piece of property in the proper area to make a lot of sense, or buying your own home, because, you know, we've seen the price appreciation, probably a lot of areas will go down, but some not as much as others. And even if they go down a bit, inflation probably is going to be here for the next decade or two. Inflationary cycles run long. The only way inflation goes away is a major economic slowdown bordering on a collapse, which then makes cash king. All right. So you need a little bit of cash. You should have, I believe, a year to 18 months supply of cash on hand in your bank account, and some Benjamins, if you will, in the mattress. But inflation is an opportunity to make way, way more money than you ever thought possible through the prudent use of debt. You buy a business, you get the owner to do owner financing, you put down as little cash as you can, and you buy that business wisely, and you're going to wind up so far ahead if you can keep that business going and build it and increase it, that it's kind of a no-brainer here. So it goes back to Robert Kiyosaki, good debt, bad debt. Now, he views homes as a consumer item, and I agree with him up until now. When you've got major inflation, major housing shortage, do you want to buy goods that are in plentiful supply, so much so that the price goes down? Or do you want to buy goods and items that are in a shortage and that the price is going to go up? It's kind of that simple. And I'm not being an advocate for real estate investing. I think buying small businesses, especially if they're marginally profitable or marginally unprofitable, and you see how you can turn that business around and make it very profitable, I think that could be the best investment you'll make. But, you know, if the economy totally collapses, then basically you want cash and you want gold and you want self-defense items in your inventory. So be a little bit prepared for that. Hopefully it won't come down to that, but we're in a changing world, and really you got to go with the tried and true income producing real estate for over 100 years in the U.S. has been a home run, and it's going to continue to be, although probably won't appreciate, might even go down in value over the next couple of years. Businesses, you know, I've made most money in my life besides real estate in starting and selling businesses and running them profitably. But, you know, that requires a skill set. But the good thing is you can get that skill set on the internet. You can learn how to do your accounting, you can learn how to do inventory management, all these things, marketing. It's all free out there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say you need to be doing. And hey, if you've got the ability in a STEM profession, then by all means, that's still going to be necessary. If you don't have the skills, learn how to fix EVs. Nobody knows how to do it now except the very few people, and they're getting huge pay. So that's, if you were going to be an auto mechanic, learn how to fix EVs, because you don't have to get grease on your hands and you don't get black fingernails from working on EVs.
That's an excellent advice. And we have a minute left, but I want to ask quick question about banks versus credit unions. Should you put your eggs in the credit union? Is it safer than the banks?
No, okay. No, because you have to understand that all cash credit in the banking system, and that includes credit unions, emanates from the Federal Reserve. Small credit unions cannot deal with the Federal Reserve themselves. They must go through a correspondent bank, which is normally one of the 5 to 10 largest banks, your Wells Fargo, Citibank, Chase, whoever the others are, BB&T, whomever they might be. Mm-hmm. They deal with the Fed, you deal with them, and they pretty much, a bank or credit union at the end of the day, if they've got extra cash, they're not leaving it in the safe. They're buying, they're loaning it to other banks. They're buying commercial paper. They're doing everything that banks do and that can potentially lose you money. You have zero added safety from a credit union. In fact, you might have less safety because when everything hits the fan, who's the U.S. government going to bail out? They're going to bail out your XYZ credit union across the street from you, or they're going to bail out JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America and Citibank. Now, credit unions, if you believe in the credit union's mission, you like their values, and you have a relationship with them, go with them. Mm-hmm. But don't delude yourself into thinking that you're any safer in a credit union, because you're not. Because the credit union is a part of the banking system.
That's excellent. I didn't realize that. So that's good information. Just like everything you said today, I really appreciate you coming on. Time goes way too fast. But I think people have something that they hang their hat on, have strategies that they can think about and put into plan. And you were really comprehensive. And so I really appreciate your time, Carrie. I know how busy you are.
Anytime, Dr. George, and we're looking forward to having you back on the show to talk about health, because financial health is all well and good. But if you don't have physical health, if your body's unhealthy, none of it matters. If you lose your health, who cares about that much money in the bank? You're not going to be around to spend it.
Well said. I absolutely agree. Anytime you let me know, I'll be happy to come on. And I want to thank you again for coming on, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.